Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-CALL-NOW. That's 713-CALL-NOW. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com. Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-CALL-NOW. That's 713-CALL-NOW. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, love my lies. Feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list.
We'll get to an apology issued to a Texans player. More evidence that this certain someone is the one who had to apologize. May not be built for the job he has. We'll get to that. But let's hear from Tim Legler, who doesn't have to apologize to anyone. He's kind of got, I would say, as far as approval rating, pretty high. He's not a pundit. He analyzes basketball, and it feels like, for the most part, whether you agree or disagree, you're like, you know, Legler, making some points. I think he's one of those.
You can tell he puts the work in.
So even if you don't like it, you know he's just not talking out of his ass.
Yeah.
It's not. He's not like us.
No.
No.
Not like us. That's what Kendrick was talking about. Tim Legler, you're not like us.
Well, if he wanted to put a certain someone in a group, he'd be like, you're more in the Legler group than you are in my group. He would certainly do that. All right, let's get to Tim Legler. He on his podcast discussed, well, Amen Thompson and how big Amen Thompson can be in a potential run for the Rockets. Here's his thoughts and what Amen Thompson needs to do to help the Rockets get where they want to be.
He, the final piece where you say they could potentially win the West. And it's this, more consistency in the threat level or improvement in the threat level of Amen Thompson offensively, where he's, because it's still like he gets left, teams dare him to shoot. It's like still this hole for them. And look, he always has good stat lines. But here's the thing. Durant Shengun gets so much attention. You don't have a choice but to throw an extra defender at both of those guys. Okay. Everybody else kind of is really, I think, doing a nice job in their lane. Jabari Smith, we talked about. Reed Shepard, we talked about. Okogie knows what he's out there to do. Like, Clint Capella knows what he's out there to do. Tari Eason. Like, everybody kind of knows. This is my spectrum of what I can be on a given night, and this is what I'm asked to do. And they're thriving in those roles. Amen Thompson, like, it could be so much more offensively if he was a little bit more impactful, because the times he gets the ball when there's these driving lanes and gaps and space – if he ever gets to that point, I don't know if it's going to happen this year. You never know. He's so young. He could have like a series of games where all of a sudden he breaks out, where he's more confident with his mid-range, more confidence when he gets all that time on a three-point shot. It's like the one component left, because he does so many things to help you win, but there's so much more meat on the bone for him offensively, because there's opportunities because of what Durant and Shengun do to occupy guys.
He is the most likely, Amen Thompson is, to make the leap that turns the Rockets from, you know, someone, a team you can actually, or turn them from a team you think is good to one you actually fear if you're another team. Like, I know the Rockets, and their ceiling, they believe, is a title. You watch them play day to day, game to game. You know that's a good basketball team. But in a 7-game series against a really good basketball team, do I think the way they're structured and the way they play to win games is going to win out over 7? I don't think so. Amen Thompson, more than Reed Sheppard, would be the guy I would look to and hope that offensive game develops. Because when you spread the floor and he gets to his Euro step, it's a great move, but it's kind of the one move. And as Legler said, he's young. So if he becomes that guy at 25, 26, great. Now, is Kevin Durant still around? Probably not. So you would love to fast forward it. But Spurs, Thunder, Nuggets, do I think the Rockets could take one of those teams in a 7-game series if they're all healthy, which, of course, is never going to be the case. It's just how the NBA works, it feels like. I think they could get the Spurs. I think that's the one team I would say, okay, you got a chance to take in a 7-gamer because they're as young as you are, and, in fact, younger when you throw in the fact that Kevin Durant's around. But do I think they'd beat the Nuggets or the Thunder in a series? Nah.
I was thinking about – I forgot which game it was this past week, but I was like, I kind of feel like they, no matter who they play in the playoffs, like, it's a minimum 6-game series.
Yeah, like, I feel like that's
how it
goes.
They just have so many, like, they just have so many games where it's just like, you just can't pull away from a team when you're doing this stuff, you know? Like, when you turn the ball over the way they turn the ball over, it's just like, the other team's just going to be in the game and in the playoffs. It's going to be a really good team. Maybe it was the Bulls game. I forgot what it was. But it was just like, yeah, like, it's not that they can't go in and blow out a bad team, although it has been since the beginning of the month since they've actually done that. But it's more that just every game kind of gets played in a phone booth, to take a football expression. Like, every game is, like, between the tackles running.
Yeah.
Is the equivalent of just like, hey, they might dominate, but the final score will be 17-10. Like, it's like they just can't actually put teams away because – there's just so much, like Legler says, there's so much fat, so much meat on the bone for all the, I mean, he's talking about Amen Thompson, about where he can go. But I think just in general, this Rockets offense, it's just like, yeah, there's like a lot of bad stuff that could get cleaned up and immediately make this a team unstoppable.
Yeah, and whether that's lack of continuity, because this roster hasn't played together very much.
Yeah.
It's only been 40-something games, and sometimes it just takes a year. Like, we want immediate results because of the 50-plus games that they won last year and, of course, losing in 7 to the Warriors. But maybe this team needs a year to play together, and that will lead to the success we're looking for.
Like, even the Thunder, I think if they played the Thunder, like, in the second round, they're the 4th seed right now.
And they beat the Lakers,
I think they can beat the Lakers. I just don't, like, the Thunder, it's like, I feel like that'll be a hyper-competitive 5 or 6-game series that the Thunder win and kind of lead the entire time.
Yeah, the Rockets just won't be able to make enough plays in those clutch game situations to win a series.
I mean, it'll be the game that we watched last week with the Rockets, where it's like, they're just, it's balls-to-the-walls basketball for 3 quarters, and the Thunder are just like, oh, yeah, let's just hit the... Like,
oh, it's winning time. Let's just hit the we know how to win button. Yeah, yeah, and that comes from going through the gauntlet they did last year to win the title. So, yeah, if Amen Thompson takes a leap offensively and he helps to mitigate some of the pressure that Şengün and Kevin Durant have to face. And by the way, beyond what the All-Star voting suggests, Şengün's not the perfect player. There are plenty of times where he's dribbling into nowhere and ruining possessions because he gets in a spot where he can't make a pass. So there's a lot of that there.
It's equal opportunity of like everyone has a WTF moment in every game, basically, with the Rockets. Like, even Kevin Durant, will throw some passes where you're just
What are you doing?
Dude, you've been in the league for 17 years. Like, why do you think you could make that pass? But then there's other nights, against the Spurs, where he has, did he have 9 assists? I forgot if he got to 10 or, but they'd played, like, a montage of all of his best passes at the end of that game. And I'm like, yeah, it was a really good passing game. despite that, there's still like three passes where I'm sure he wants it back. Like it's just there's no true point guard. There's no like organizing force. Like you said, Şengün is the best passer on the team, but he still will make mistakes, dribble to nowhere. I mean, there's two straight plays in that Spurs game where on a fast break, he jumps up to make a pass, no one's open, and he just throws it out of bounds. Like that just happens. You know, like that, and that is what adds up when you make the or when you get to the playoffs. It's just like that's why I don't think they can put a team away, like a real contender away in an easy series.
Yeah, there are a number of what are you doing things that the Rockets do on a game to game basis that limits their ceiling. And of course, that ceiling may not be fully realized until a couple years down the line as these guys continue to play together. As is the case with this show, we talk about sports, but the caller wants to talk about something else. I don't know what this is. I've seen Will Smith on my timeline, but I have not clicked on anything because at this point, unless he's hitting another comedian, I don't care that much. But Dr. Dre wants to talk about what appears to be a new Will Smith show. What's up?
Hey, morning, fellas. Yeah, I wanted to change gears a little bit and change the subject to Will Smith. The name of the show is called Pole to Pole. Is this about docking or something? I'm curious. Maybe Michael Carroll can give us a breakdown on it. If this is about docking with, I don't know, whatever actor in West Hollywood he would like to be with, but. Also, another thing, hey, Israel, we ain't forgot about you, man. How about that boy C.J. Stroud, man? You speaking up for the man? What you going to do? Appreciate the time, fellas. I'm out.
If you want to know what docking is beyond what you do for a boat, you're going to have to type in that with Urban Dictionary. I'm not going to explain it. I will tell you that the new Will Smith show is not about what you think it is, Dr. Dre. All you got to do is type in Will Smith pole to pole, and it's about him exploring like the Arctic or something, or at least some ice covered area of the world where he is in snowshoes and cross country skis, trekking across the ice and snow.
Inspired by his late mentor, Will Smith takes on varied challenges over 100 days, venturing from pole to pole in the company of scientists, explorers, and local experts, climbing mountains, diving under ice, and taking on wild creatures. But this is like a National Geographic show. So when they say taking on wild creatures,
what's it like?
They don't mean like fighting the things from Avatar. They mean
like seals and also polar bears or something,
buffalo or something. Yeah,
yeah. And of course, he'll be in the jungle as well. As I look at the trailer, so he's just going to travel the world. Will Smith doing his old Bourdain thing, except not with food, I guess. He's just going to be traveling the globe. This is an interesting thing. You know, I'm going to spend a couple months away from everything and do this kind of documentary style style thing. And we'll see. I'm probably not going to watch it.
Yeah, I don't think I will. I think I'm out. I was when I saw a new Will Smith show, I was like, oh, is it like a Bad Boys kind of thing? Or is it True Detective? Is he like taking a turn for like prestige TV? No, he's doing what could really be a travel vlog.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is.
But paid for by National Geographic.
Will Smith gets the money from National Geographic, I assume, unless he's footing the bill to do a documentary about his time
going pole to pole,
seeing the sights around the world. He's got some cave. He's going to descend into a cave with giant spiders. So we'll see.
Giant spiders?
I'm looking at giant spiders on the wall of this cave.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Maybe this is like – it is taking on wild creatures.
He said creatures. The tagline said creatures. It's going to be on Disney Plus and Hulu. So there it is. As far as his second thing about calling out Israel – I don't know that Israel calls the station anymore, but
I don't think he really ever called this show.
No, it was he didn't do that here. That was on the John and Lance show when he was taking shots at
Israel. And then he would call the afternoon show as well.
Yeah. He never really got to call this show and back a black quarterback or talk about Reed Sheppard not being good. Yeah. That wasn't his vibe on this show. Speaking of C.J. Stroud, when we come back, Dan Orlovsky had some words about C.J. Stroud. And you know how they say the apology should be as loud as the disrespect or whatever, however that line goes? Well, Dan Orlovsky listened to everyone. He has decided that what he said, he shouldn't have said. So we'll hear from Dan Orlovsky when we come back. If anyone else wants to call out a listener who never called this show, so be it. 713-780-3776. If you have a problem with Chris in the Woodlands and you want to call him out, despite the fact that you've never heard him call this show, open forum for that. 713-780-3776. But what you've heard on the show before and what you're about to hear again is me telling you about the great people at Monument Chevrolet. We had lunch with those guys last week, and they walked us through what happens in the car buying business. And Jeff was there, and Jeff wants to be your point person. He wants to be the guy you go to if you got a question about the great things happening at Monument Chevrolet. It doesn't always have to be great things. Maybe you just got a question that you're confused about, and he will answer it for you as well. So ask for Jeff when you go on out there. They're in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And as you might expect, they have great Chevys on the lot for you. So all you got to do, it's pretty simple, go to monumentchevrolet.com and check out the website. Check out all the cars. And the car of the week this week is the Traverse. If you're looking for a midsize SUV for your family, it's there for you. And, you know, you might think SUVs, soccer mom vibes, even if you are a soccer mom, but you don't want to portray that image, then get the Traverse. It's got this, it's got the look, and it also got the specs. So if you are someone who wants to tow, it's got a 5,000-pound towing capacity, and it can get you off-road as well. At least off-road trims are available as well. So it's a do-it-all SUV for you if that's what you're looking for. It is the vehicle of the week at Monument Chevrolet. So you've got the great cars. You got the great people, whether it be the salespeople or Jeff himself. If you're in business for over 50 years and you retain the employees the way that they do, that means they're doing something right for the people that work there and for the community that gets cars for them. So monumentchevrolet.com is that website. Find the vehicle for you and then go on out there and drive that vehicle off the lot. It's going to be a great experience. You're going to be very happy with your choice. That's Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5. The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So let's get to this. On Monday, after the Texans lost to the Pats, it's time for all the talk shows on television to give their thoughts. And one man gave his opinion and said that 31 other quarterbacks could have won that Pats game in place of C.J. Stroud. Well, as he's wont to do, Dan Orlovsky has walked it back. Here's Dan Orlovsky this morning on his comments. Why did it take till Thursday? Maybe he had to reflect. I don't know. But here's Dan Orlovsky using his time to walk back what he said about C.J. Stroud.
Before I do that, You know, I want to go back to Monday morning, because on Monday morning after the Patriot-Texans game, I went on and said, Houston wins that game with 31 other quarterbacks. I want to publicly apologize to C.J. Stroud. I crossed the line. I don't ever want to do that in this role. When I started 8 years ago, I was making the commitment, never go on TV and say, well, they won because the quarterback played good, or they lost because the quarterback played bad. And so I've been called out on it. Accountability, full stop, shouldn't have done it. There's ways for me to say that in regards to C.J. Stroud did the one thing he couldn't do, and that's why they lose the game. I don't want to take away from New England's defense as well. So, full stop, that wasn't cool of me, and that was wrong of me. Different way for me to communicate that. On to New England right before.
Oof. Some people aren't built for it, right? That's my takeaway. Who called him out? Like, who got upset about, hey, that performance was so bad that I could pick 31 other guys in the league playing win that game? He didn't name the 31. It's not like he said, you know what, I could have got Zach Wilson to win that game. Because, yeah, if you're a C.J. Stroud backer, that's insulting. But how many quarterbacks on are in the league, whether they're their emergency quarterback or the backup, you go 32 times three. We'll leave the practice squad guys out of it. You don't think 31 other guys could have gone out there and played to the Texans' defense and won that game? Or at least played better than CJ and gave your team a chance? Maybe if he had said, I could have found 31 other guys to give a better performance, would that have been less insulting? It wouldn't have required an apology? Think of the league as it stands right now. Like, the name that's been the name on the morning show is Mac Jones. If Mac Jones was quarterbacking the Texans last year, or last week, the 49er backup, do the Texans have a better shot of winning that game than the way CJ Stroud played? Like, I guess it's insulting to say that someone else could have won that game, 31 other quarterbacks. Let's say 31 other quarterbacks could have played better, which I think is underselling. I think a lot more than 31 could have played better than he did on that night, on that day. Mac Jones, does he win that game or at least play better and give the Texans a better chance to win? I'm going to go yes.
I think so as well.
Does Jarrett Stidham, since he's in the news, ooh, because he has to play, does Jarrett Stidham play a better game than CJ Stroud?
America has not seen Jarrett Stidham throw a regular season pass in over a year.
Yeah. Really, since CJ Stroud was a very good quarterback, the last time Jarrett Stidham threw a pass in a regular season game.
Yes.
All right, let's start with the guy.
I think Jarrett Stidham will play better than CJ Stroud against the common opponent.
Okay. I think that's not crazy to say that the Broncos will likely get a much better game as far as ball security from Jarrett Stidham than the Texans got from CJ Stroud.
Yeah. Some of that is also like they have Sean Payton calling plays.
It's true. But Nick Caley wasn't at fault for that pick to Marcus Jones.
That's what I need to keep reminding myself, is that this wasn't a bad performance in a way that's like, yeah, they were just calling the wrong play. You know how we all talk about
Nick Caley. Call the good plays, Nick Caley.
Call the good plays, not the bad ones. This one's like, it was really some day one stuff. He was screwing up. It's like when you are making a mistake and like compounding it by making another mistake is really what he's done the last two games.
Who put the pressure on him or made him rethink to apologize? Because it struck a chord here, and Get Up, I think, used it as one of their breakout videos on social media. But you know what? When he said it, I'm like, he's probably right.
I was going to say, did it strike a chord in Houston?
Because he mentioned CJ Stroud on Get Up. But as far as anyone going, you know, he's dead wrong on that. How many people were like, you know what? That's out of line after watching that game.
Because like when go way back in the day, not that far back actually, but about a decade, when like someone would get on TV and be like, they can't win, like the Rockets can't win with James Harden as your best player. Like Rockets fans got upset about that. Yeah, Rockets fans took up the shield. Who, what Texan fan on Monday morning were like, this actually isn't CJ Stroud's fault. Like I feel like maybe it's just the, I don't know, I'm in the talk radio bubble of all the callers, all the, you know, listeners. Well, it seems like it's like 80-90% agree that it's like, CJ Stroud had a stinker.
I could be wrong, but going by how people who don't do this can be more freewheeling with their words, I'm going to bet there were worse things said about CJ Stroud in other places of business, in people's homes, than anything we have said this week. I'm going to bet that most people who care about this team were watching that game and said things far worse than we would ever say because we want to keep jobs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No.
I mean, just go by your group chats.
Yeah.
If you were in a group chat with someone talking about the game, the things that you might have said or your friend might have said about CJ Stroud, you would never hear here because there are standards and practices.
Monday night, we're debating whether Carson Beck would have won the game on Sunday. Just having Carson Beck throw screens.
I wasn't in that group chat, but someone was having that conversation. Yes. So this is what we're talking about. And he has to apologize for that. I guess he thought he was too flippant. Someone said, hey, how could you say that? A lot of people were saying that. In fact, what Dan Orlovsky said wasn't even at the top of the awful things people were saying about CJ Stroud. What are we talking about?
No, like there's a wing of like Houston, it's like the, it's mostly like Astros and Rockets people that are, you know, they don't, they're not in the salary cap weeds. They're not in the NFL weeds. And I saw them on Sunday and Monday just being like, so is it possible to trade this guy? Like, is it possible to get rid of CJ Stroud? Like, Dan Orlovsky didn't go like, this guy's a bum and needs to be off this team. Like, yeah. He just said, no, I think 31 other quarterbacks could have played better, which is factual, I think. I think there's 30 quarterbacks in the league whose basement is higher than
what we saw.
Than what we saw. Like,
yeah.
Their ceiling is also higher. Like, there's just the, like, fluke game that a guy could have that, like, yeah, you know what? I don't think he throws 4 interceptions.
Geno Smith, unquestionably awful this year.
But there's a possibility.
There's a possibility if you rolled him out for the Texans on Sunday, he plays better than CJ Stroud.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't disagree. And that's just one quarterback on a bad football team. Let's stick with the AFC South. Does Phillip Rivers or Riley Leonard play a better game?
No, I mean, Big Philly, definitely.
Riley Leonard, probably.
Maybe. Again, it's possible. Like, he played better against the Texans defense.
Yeah. Cam Ward? Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the next guy we're going to mention, definitely, if we go by the AP voters, and I'll get to that story, and it's the more embarrassing part of the whole thing, that you play in a division. CJ plays in a division with this guy, and this guy has risen to a level where he can be a postseason, potentially award winner. And someone texted me, you already know what kind of stuff I was saying about him. That's not including all of my friends. It started after the pick six and still continues. This is what I'm saying. The normal person would look at Dan Orlovsky and what he said, like, you're too kind. You're too kind. We were saying far worse things in the privacy of our own homes and groups chats, and he has to apologize for saying something rather milquetoast, honestly. But
yeah. Mulligetta made the call.
Did he elbow Ryan Clark and go, hey, talk to your boy?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Perhaps. I don't know why Dan Orlovsky's had a tough week because he defended Josh Allen vehemently. And
he should apologize for that.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing we all take issue with.
That's more embarrassing, honestly.
He went on Pat McAfee, and they got after him about it. So,
yeah, think about that.
He's broke. He's a broken man when it comes to quarterback talk.
Think about that. Dan Orlovsky had a take that was so that left such a bad taste in people's mouth that he had a semi-combative interview with the Pat McAfee show.
Yeah,
a show that he's regularly on. Even they were like, what the hell's your problem?
What are you doing, man?
And he apologized for the CJ Stroud take. that locally, that in the people that have seen the most CJ Stroud games all agree with him.
Yeah. And yet, he never wants to be that guy. Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
Whatever.
I would say, and as a man,
Josh Allen wins that game. I'll say it.
Well, Josh Allen had a pretty bad performance, too.
Yeah, but I think.
But Josh Allen at least probably plays better.
He had that performance.
And they still scored 30 points.
30 points and went to overtime.
Yeah, true. Very true. Very true. Against what you would consider better defense.
Yes, and with the worst defense behind him.
It's true. Well, now that you laid it out for me, Josh Allen, even with the performance that he had against Denver, beats the Pats. if you just transfer that performance to Sunday as opposed to Saturday.
Yeah, like he led multiple touchdown drives.
Yeah.
Like,
and CJ led, what, one?
Two. Christian Kirk.
Did they score another touchdown? No.
Did they? I forgot.
Was it 28-16? So no. Yeah. They led one. Led one touchdown drive. And then threw an awful pick in the red zone as well. But yeah, Dan Orlovsky out of line. Okay. We'll come back with the news that should be more talked about when we talk about CJ Stroud. He allowed this guy to get to a postseason award finalist group before he did. What's the NFL quarterback world coming to, as you said during a break, we used to watch gods play this sport, and now this guy's a finalist for MVP. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So this morning we found out who are the finalists for the postseason awards, or at least the award show, the NFL award show. And Will Anderson is a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year, along with Myles Garrett, Aiden Hutchinson, Nick Bonito, the Broncos. You can guess that Myles Garrett, who led the league in sacks and broke the single season sack record, is going to win that award. MVP. Names you would not be surprised by. Of course, Drake May, Matt Stafford. You throw in Josh Allen and one Christian McCaffrey. The one name that I never thought would be in consideration, considering how his career had gone up to the point Liam Cohen took over, was Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is one of five people up for the MVP award. He's not going to win the MVP, but the AP voters have decided he's played well enough to be a finalist. I think it's just more proof that this is a quarterback award and a quarterback award only. I know that McCaffrey's in the mix, but you're telling me if we go across the league, and yes, Trevor Lawrence had a good back half of the season as he got more accustomed to the offense that Liam Cohen implemented. And of course, Jacoby Myers, that trade helped. But the fifth most valuable player in football is Trevor Lawrence. Quarterbacks used to be gods amongst men.
Yeah.
Now they're Trevor Lawrence, and he's an MVP candidate. He was fine, but MVP worthy, even finalist worthy. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
You throw Myles Garrett in there, I know the Browns stunk, and he's going to win DPOY. You could when you're coming down to Trevor Lawrence as your fifth pick, and I assume he's the fifth pick. Maybe Chris McCaffrey had the fifth most amount of votes. Who knows? You could go defense, like. If we're at that point, pick a great defender and throw him in there if you're a voter.
Or look at Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, fine. Pick a guy out of that group to add to. Yeah, why not? Well, Matt Stafford, throw Puka Nacua in there as well. You could do that.
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
There are guys you could have gone with. But you had to just pick another quarterback, and Trevor Lawrence was the guy? Okay.
Okay. All right.
Congratulations to Duval for at least making it as a finalist. He's not going to win. It's going to go to Matt Stafford, who was first team All-Pro according to the AP. But yeah, stop it. It's a quarterback award, sure.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be this quarterback as part of the final five. You could have found a more deserving choice who was a non-quarterback in a world where you have Matt Stafford as your first place vote anyway. But there it is. Some other things out there as far as awards. I think the Texans only have Will Anderson. I didn't see another Texan mention. Like Matt Burke didn't get Assistant Coach of the Year. That's an award now.
BS.
Like the Broyles Award in college football. Yeah. Josh McDaniels, Vance Joseph, who those two are going to go face each other in the AFC title game. Clint Kubiak, a name, at least the last name we're familiar with, and Brian Flores and Vic Fangio all were Assistant Coach of the Year. So no Matt Burke. He had the best defense in football and didn't make the list.
Yeah, they don't watch ball.
No, but they do watch ball because they talk about how great. But is this a case of, hey, all you do is tell those guys to hunt? Like how everyone loves this defense because they think it's very simple and all they do is, hey, go rush the passers. Is that what hurt Matt Burke? That all you do is line up your defensive ends and go tell them to rush the quarterback?
They get hit with over talented college football defenses used to get it was where it's like the defensive coordinator gets basically no credit because
all he does is line up all the five stars out there and tell them to go play. It's simplified. Just go play, hit, go
rush
run
four.
And be violent. Yeah. And so you don't get your kudos. I don't know. Maybe they have to become accustomed to it because D'Amico Ryans as the defensive minded head coach is looked at as the architect, even though we know 3 games in after they're 0-3. Matt Burke was given over control.
That's actually probably the reason because I'm looking at Assistant Coach of the Year, Brian Flores, his
under
head coach.
Under an offensive head coach, yeah.
Offensive head coach. Kubiak, defensive head coach.
Vance Joseph, offensive head coach.
Yep.
Josh McDaniels.
Defensive,
like, leader of men head coach and Mike Vrabel. And, and Vic Fangio.
Offensive mastermind, Nick Sirianni.
Sure. That's what they're saying in Philly right now. Offensive mastermind.
They don't even want him to hire the offensive coordinator. Never mind call
like
plays.
The presser this year, and I was listening to some Philly sports media talk about it. it was, we're going to pretend that that Sirianni has any control because we don't want it out there that any the head coach here doesn't have real say in what goes on here. But we know that they said the last time, well, before he got to hire Petullo because that's his guy. I think he came over from the Colts with him.
Yeah.
And, of course, that didn't work out. So it has been every other year, it looks like, they allow Nick Sirianni to make a call, and it's always failed.
It's they have Nick Sirianni hire coordinator. It goes horribly wrong.
And then they take over.
Then
Howie Roseman and the owner take over.
Then they make the Super Bowl, and that guy gets a head coaching job.
And then they let Sirianni, because they made the Super Bowl, make another decision that doesn't work.
And then Howie Roseman grabs the wheel again, hires Kellen Moore, who gets a head coaching job. And then, all right, well, we won the Super Bowl. We got to
go ahead, Nick.
We got to let Sirianni. He has so much goodwill. Yeah. We have to let him
promote your boy, Petullo. That doesn't work out. So now it's our turn again.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see who they hire. We'll see who they hire. Because I was going to say, at some point, if you're Howie Roseman, you just got to be like, so what are we paying this guy for?
For vibes, and the vibes are terrible this year.
Vibes are always terrible.
Yeah. A.J. Brown won a Super Bowl, wasn't thrilled.
Even when they're winning the Super or when they were going to win the Super Bowl, A.J. Brown was on the sideline reading a book about, like, positive thinking. Like, very subtly being like, I hate it here.
Not that subtly. If you're reading a book on the sidelines.
But at least he wasn't like, the quotes now are much less subtle than reading a book on the sideline.
Yeah.
Again, while you're in the midst of a playoff Super Bowl run. You're beating the hell out of the Green Bay Packers. And your quarterback or your receiver's just like, God, it sucks here.
I got to find my inner peace to survive. Sticking with football, John, do you know about the conspiracy theory that's floating around why the 49ers always get hurt?
Oh, do I know? Do I know about the conspiracy?
For people who don't know, apparently when Levi Stadium was built, which is where the 49ers play in Santa Clara, the expansion of that led to their practice facility being right next to a power plant.
Yep.
And the conspiracy theory is, if you don't know, the 49ers suffer remarkably. Remarkably, they suffer so many crippling injuries that it short circuits multiple seasons. This season, Fred Warner got hurt. Of course, Kittle couldn't get through a season because he tore his Achilles. It continues to be a thing. It's been a long-running thing. And if you look at their defense to end the year, it's unrecognizable from what they thought it would be.
Every year they have the amount of injuries where if you're a fan, you're like, no way we get that hurt again. We're going to be good next year.
And the 49ers are like, hold on, wait a minute.
Yeah, no, actually, we're just going to get hurt every year that bad.
So a 40, I don't know if it was a 49er fan or someone simply who decided to investigate.
Someone thinking outside the box.
Pointed to this power plant near the practice facility as a reason why. And the 49ers acknowledge the theory and say, hey, we will investigate all potential reasons why we continue to suffer these type of injuries.
Broad strokes, the theory is that these electromagnetic waves produced by the power
are
emitted from the power
plant. Screwing up the soft tissue and muscles in the 49ers' bodies.
It weakens the ligaments.
Yeah.
And it weakens the muscles in like the soft tissue stuff. So, I mean... about as good of a theory as I can think of.
For a while. You know, the normal thing, hey, football's a physical, violent game, so guys get hurt. But the 49ers are like, hey, even
every year?
Even acknowledging that, there's something weird going on. And unless Seattle sent a witch doctor down to curse us, we got to look into this and see if it's possible. Now, the theory has been debunked by, like, scientists saying there's nothing backing it. But the 49ers are like, hey, we're open. We're open to listening to why this continues to happen to us.
Free thinkers.
Yeah. Like, there are some stadiums that have been built on, like, literal burial grounds. So people attribute a curse to why their team doesn't really succeed. This one is like, hey, science. Let's look into science and see what's the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. There's other stadiums or other stadium that was built and then became a burial ground, allegedly. Shout to old... Meadowlands, the old Meadowlands Stadium with the Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah. This has to be, I mean,
this
it has to
quote.
Be investigated.
This is the quote from John Lynch. We've been reaching out to anyone and everyone to see, does a study exist other than a guy sticking an apparatus underneath the fence and coming up with a number that I have no idea what that means? That's what we know exists. We've heard that debunked. The health and safety of our players is of the utmost priority. We pour into it. Our ownership, Jed York, is tremendous in terms of resources and will always be cognizant of things. I know that a lot of games have been won at this facility since it opened, but yeah, we aren't going to turn a blind eye. So they will get Mythbusters in there to see.
Get Mythbusters. Are they still around?
I don't know that they are.
I know they don't still do a show, but are they like still with us?
I hope the 49ers do, like how Brandon Bean had cameras follow him around and now the receipts of him saying he really loved Keon Coleman are out there. I need a very similar approach to this investigation. John Lynch needs to be asked about it. Because Kendrick Bourne made reference to it.
Yeah, the thing is now it's broken contained.
Yeah, it's gotten to the players and they're actually talking about it in some ways.
And I think that's really why John Lynch is giving voice to it as like a, we're looking into it, you dummies. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Pretty much. That's probably the tone.
But I will say, if you want to do that, you blow it out. You make it all, you go full A&E on
it. Yeah, you do that. Make it an event.
You get the Mythbusters in there. You get the ghost hunters or whatever. You get Zach Baggins in there. You get, I don't know, who. What other reality TV show can we get? Guy Fieri. I'm sure he can.
What's Bill Nye up to? Does he want to be involved?
Bill Nye, the science guy. Yeah. Like, let's really build it out.
Neil deGrasse,
Bear Grylls. Oh, I don't know.
I think he's the one who's executive producing Pole to Pole with
Will Smith.
I don't know.
Light pole to light.
Whatever it takes to find out and document it for all of us.
Yeah. No, I think that's how the 49ers should spend their. I mean, draft, free agency, blah 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 blah.
Sure.
Also, focus on this. I think this has legs to really. I mean, come like May after the draft, and it's like rookie OTAs. Like, come on.
Do you want a four-parter?
Yes.
Yeah. You want it to
six?
You
want it to, who cares?
Like a mini series.
Yeah.
A limited series.
One episode for each A&E show. Yeah. That gets a crack at.
Let's them. Not and
Duck Dynasty can get involved. I don't know what they would do, but sure.
And let's not make it a binge. Let's make it a weekly thing that we can have appointment television for.
Yep. Build word of mouth.
Yeah, and let's see if there are real answers to why. Of all things, Brock Purdy suffered from turf toe and other debilitating injuries that they've had this year.
Their entire defense.
Yeah, Nick Bosa tore his ACL. Fred Warner fractured and dislocated his ankle. That I don't know if bones are weakened, but I don't know. Let's find out.
Yeah,
Mikel Williams tore his ACL as well.
Dre Greenlaw running onto the field pops his Achilles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
like it's like wild stuff that happens. I forgot if that was Greenlaw, but I think it was Greenlaw.
Yeah,
it's like it is just wild stuff every single year. Ricky Pearsall just all.
Well,
of
he
it.
Did get shot,
but he didn't play much this year either. And
that's true.
Due
he had
various injuries.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, I don't.
You're not going to attribute the gunfire to the substation or whatever it is?
Not yet. I need another Twitter thread. Maybe one more Twitter thread can maybe talk me into it.
They're looking into whether or not excessive exposure to electromagnetic force is contributing to their injury rate. This is where they are right now. They get, like, Kyle Shanahan's been around so long, he's been so close, and when he doesn't make a Super Bowl, it's generally because they're hurt.
Also, think
anything
about,
anything that will get them to overcome their injury issues, they'll look into.
Think about how like NFL players used to take care of their bodies, relatively recently.
Yeah,
and like fast forward to 2026, and it's like electromagnetic fields might be affecting our performance.
Hey, find an answer.
These guys are smoking in the locker rooms of Super Bowls, but yeah, no, I think
Jim. What was his name? There was Plunkett. Kenny Stabler is the one I always think about. Kenny Stabler, the way he approached football. And now and then, we're at a point in 2026.
Yeah, him that it's like, no, these guys are popping their Achilles because of practicing near electromagnetic fields.
Well, let's find those answers, 49ers. We'll see.
Yeah. Ghost hunters.
All right,
on it.
We got one more segment to go. We'll be back. Number 713-780-3776. A couple more things to get to. We'll wrap it up and take you to Rich Eisen.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So the Rockets play the Sixers tonight, and I was double-checking to make sure that was the case this morning, and I got stuck on this particular thing that happened last night in the NBA. Do you know that the Nets got beat 120-66 last night? 120-66. The Knicks beat them. The Knicks, who had been struggling, had a players-only meeting, beat the Nets 120-66. In today's NBA, they scored 66 points, which got me to look up the lowest scoring games in the NBA since 2020. It is not the lowest scoring game since 2020, only because, actually I take it back, it is the lowest scoring game. The second lowest scoring game, the Nets last year around this time as well, where they scored 67 points. So the Nets, in the last 6 years, have the top two lowest scoring games in NBA history since 2020. 66 and 67 points. And then I decided to know, you know, to look up how many field goals do you score in a second half, because they only scored 28 points in the second half, so not a lot of field goals. I counted it, 10 field goals made in the second half for the Nets. And two of them came in the last 45 seconds of the game, where Terrence Mann made a layup and then Danny Wolfe made a three-pointer.
Okay, so they're sitting at 61.
Up until 45.3 seconds left. I don't know. Look, it was in the Garden, so it's not like Nets fans had to sit in their own building and watch it. I don't imagine how many people would have hung around anyway. I don't know how you get through that game as a Nets fan without wanting to. Oh, okay. I was going to say something really aggressive. Well, that wanting everyone fired, I guess. Look, yeah. They're not supposed to win. They're not looking to win. But 66 points in a basketball game.
There's been a lot of really bad teams.
I just went through the list of the worst teams in the last five seasons.
Yeah.
And the Nets are at the top.
Think about that.
As far as lowest scoring games.
Every Steven Silas Rockets basketball game, the Rockets scored more points than the Brooklyn Nets did last night.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's not a full list because I'm not paying for StatMuse, but they're the only team since 2020 to have one game scoring less than 70 points in a basketball game, and they have two of those.
Two in the last
six seasons of basketball. Yeah. That's
and just like in the last calendar year.
Yeah, like the 67 point game happened January 15th of last year.
Okay, so 370 games.
Yeah, 70 plus days. Yeah, 70 days. That's what they're on. And I get it. You want to be awful. You want a chance at the first pick overall, but that's got to be tough for anyone who cares about Nets basketball. They're not many, even in the area, because they're all Knicks fans. But 66 points.
The Knicks got to 120?
Yeah, they got to 120.
You know what? It's not bad defense, if you think about it.
Because you would assume if you're only scoring 66 points, you stop caring about playing defense.
A lot of fast breaks.
Yeah, a lot of long rebounds. And yet, you held them to 120.
Yeah.
So I'll give them credit for not quitting, I guess.
Shout out to your defense. Shout out to, I don't know, Nick Claxton.
Yeah.
Holding it down.
I mean, the Knicks did shoot 57% from the field and 50% from three.
So, you know what? They're probably, were they running clock? The entire
I don't know if the
half.
Knicks were playing four corners to just get out of there. I'm not sure if you put chew clock on when you're playing basketball.
But
whatever happened, just like whatever happens to the Rockets this year, whatever it is, just know it's far worse in Brooklyn and a lot worse in other places. You don't have to worry about that.
They only had 14 turnovers.
They just shot awfully. They were just awful shooting the basketball.
29% for the field, 28 from three.
It almost feels like those numbers are too high.
Yeah.
When you only score 66 points in a game.
69% from the free throw line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's obviously bad, but it feels like it should be much worse. Like in the team shooting the basketball.
Yeah. No.
When you get 79 shots up, they had one less shot than the Knicks.
I was going to say they shot 79 times. The Knicks shot 80. They shot, four less free throws, not a huge difference. Like,
I know it adds up. It just feels like it should be worse.
I mean, the biggest thing is 23 made field goals versus 46.
Yes. Yeah,
so. That's where you're – but even like – yeah, I don't know. Yeesh.
I don't know how many people actually watched it live.
29 fast break points for the Knicks.
But what an awful game of basketball that had to have been. So yesterday when we wrapped it up, and we're about to be done here, I mentioned that the trailer for Masters of the Universe, the He-Man movie, was going to come out today. And I watched it in the middle of a break during the John and Lance show. You know, I actually like the tone of what they're doing, but the CGI slop is awful. Like, they've got animals that, of course, they're not going to be real, like a tiger. It looks terrible.
I was going to say.
It looks like not the most recent Dungeons & Dragons. Or what was the, it looks like all the stuff from World of Warcraft movie, where all that stuff looks terrible. That's what all the CGI, particularly the animals, look like. That took me out of it. I actually didn't mind the tone of the trailer. It feels like it's supposed to be this epic movie, but then you look and it's, hey, that's the girl from Riverdale, and that's a stupid-looking tiger. Michael will give his review of it tomorrow, but I'm out. Just the CGI looks terrible, which makes me think it's going to be a bad movie. But who knows? Maybe the He-Man movie will be great.
I only saw a still of that tiger, and I'm like, for that reason, I am out.
Yeah, it looks terrible. What do you? I know I got to suspend disbelief. I watched dragons fly around every Sunday night for like three seasons, but still, those dragons look good. This is clearly a cartoon tiger in every way. Shout out to He-Man.
There's also a guy that looks like Metroid standing next to him. Like, yeah. What is this thing even
I think
about?
Idris Elba's in it. Yeah. Elba is in the movie as well. I know you have the power, He-Man, but not to get good CGI. We're done for the day. Rich Eisen is up next. But since we're done for the day, what does that mean, Sean?
Duval.
He does have an MVP candidate somehow. Hey, Nick Haley. Come on. What are we doing? We'll talk to you tomorrow.
ESPN 97.5.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.